Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Janine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hello, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause, and today's episode is all about vaccines. Are they good for us? Are they bad for us? It's kind of like coconut oil and coffee. One day they're good, the next day they're bad. We have them linked to things such as autism in this case, also autoimmune conditions. What the heck do we do? Well, because my podcast is about health and about looking at ways to help you age better, I wanted to kind of address the adult perspective of vaccines and talk a little bit, yes, about the kiddos, but really on the level of adults, we're looking at some businesses requiring us to get flu shots. This, in fact, happened to me when I was living in Colorado. We had to get flu shots if we wanted to stay at our place of work and not have to wear a mask throughout the whole cold and flu season. And so, you know, there's things of that nature that are happening out there. And for a lot of us, the other issue comes up with vaccines is when to get the booster. Should we be getting a tetanus booster? Should we be getting a pertussis booster? So you've probably seen the common ads out there about how kiddos get pertussis, which is a respiratory illness, and it, most of the time it is passed by adults. And so I get a lot of questions about that in my practice, and I'll talk a little bit about that today. And then the last thing is really the vaccines for travel. Do we need them? Who should we believe on what we need? Is the CDC, so the Center for Disease Control, telling us the truth? Or are these anti-vaccine folks exposing all of the aspects on vaccines? Well, I'm not here to be anti-vaccine, and I'm not here to be fully pro-vaccine either. I'm kind of on the fence between a lot of it because there are some interesting components about vaccines in terms of the schedule at which we have folks getting vaccines, in particular kiddos, and also the conditions at which we're in when we get vaccines. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that today as I go through the podcast. So first things first, what do I see in practice? A lot of patients are always asking me, are vaccines a big pharma and government combined scam? You know, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. And I'll explain that in a little bit because I do think that the basis for vaccines is a very good idea. It's just how we recommend them to folks is the bad idea. And we just need to work around that component. Is how I see it. Now, another big thing that I always get asked is, can you get the flu from the flu shot? And, you know, yes, in some cases when the flu shot was a live virus, yes, you could get it because they're injecting a live virus. If the virus is killed, which it is in that case now, no. And why do people feel sick from flu shots? Well, it's because your immune system's reacting. That's what vaccines are. This is like a big, huge punch to your immune system to kick itself into gear. And so one of the big things I want you to think about today during today's podcast is really, do we need a big punch to our immune systems if our immune systems are already hyperactive? And I'll talk a little bit about what that means here in a second. So hold on. So the other big thing I get from my patients here are questions around autism and vaccines. Now, there are studies that have ruled out the connection between autism and vaccines, but there are a lot of connections. And where those connections come in and where I tend to see the connections is toxic bodies. So kiddos who are getting these vaccines are eating Frankenfood. They're eating kid food, things that are manufactured with a lot of preservatives and a lot of food colorings and a huge amount of genetically modified foods and inflaming foods too, like genetically modified wheat, corn, soy, things of that nature. And so we've got little bodies who are inflamed, who are already having an immune system reaction because of the Frankenfood they're eating top that with the environmental things they have to deal with day in, day out. And then you give them vaccines, and a lot of them. Well, you cause the immune system to work overtime. If the immune system is going to work overtime, then what's going to happen to you? Well, your body might get really excited about having an active immune system, and then it starts to attack you. And so this is where I think the connection between illnesses and vaccines really comes from, being overstimulated already. And this is, you know, something that I look at in my practice as to, when did people start feeling sick? Was it after a vaccination? Were they within, you know, a month to 6 months of a vaccination? So something to think about in that case. Now, another biggie, of course, is the connection with pertussis and that respiratory illness being an issue because of the commercials that were aired over the last year. It was some pretty good scare tactics. And so I often get questions from grandparents that aren't allowed to see their grandkids till they get this vaccine. And the grandparents are asking me, what is my opinion on the pertussis vaccine? And so, of course, I go back to, where is their immune system at? And that's where I'm going to go into today and kind of really talk about that. Now, a couple other questions that I do commonly get that I want to kind of allude to here and then swing back full circle around to them is that, are there connections to vaccines and death? Are there connections to the HPV, so human papillomavirus vaccine, Gardasil in particular, to premature ovarian failure? So this is infertility, causing infertility in young women. And is it also connected to amenorrhea, so stopping the period? And which obviously, if you stop the period, you might be stopping ovulation as well. And that might also be another cause for infertility. And this is something that I am starting to see in the adult population and my young adults and young females who all of a sudden now they're not able to get pregnant and they had the HPV vaccination 3 months, a month prior, things of that nature. And we're kind of going down the lines going, okay, well, you had the vaccination, then you got married, and now you're trying to have kids. Could it be that? Or did you get the vaccination a while ago and now you have infertility, but you were showing signs of having amenorrhea and things of that nature right after the vaccine? So I don't know. I can't say for sure. It all goes back to how inflamed was the body when you got that vaccine. And oftentimes with the HPV vaccine, we're looking at females before the age of 27. We're also looking at females who have not had sex prior, things of that nature. And the younger you are when you get the HPV vaccine, I think that's the better, because perhaps, you know, if you think about it, think about what you were eating when you were 12 or 13 years old, 14, 15. Now, when we're starting to get folks getting this vaccine, you're eating junk. You have the start of acne. Your hormones are all over the place. Your body's inflamed. And so the reason I'm saying younger is before the hormones start to throw things off and before the kiddos really start to fight the parents in terms of what they're eating. So perhaps having some control over the diet has a little bit to say or to do with folks who get infertility along the way from HPV. So just something to think about. All right. So what do we know really about these vaccines? Well, we know that mumps and diphtheria, these are some of the vaccines that are out there. Those guys were documented way back in 400 BC. So Hippocrates was talking about these illnesses. They're old illnesses. If we could get rid of them, well, why not? But the question then becomes, how damning are they? Diphtheria causes some pretty nasty symptoms. And so I do actually recommend that vaccine. Now, measles, mumps, those guys, you know, they're not so great to have, but you can survive. And there aren't a ton of cases in the U.S., but for all intents purposes, if you've not had the measles or mumps vaccine, you have to be prepared to not go out in public places thinking you're protected because everyone else has a vaccine. We are a very world traveling community these days, and there are people from all over that might not have had the vaccine and might be infected with these conditions, and you might catch them. You never know. Now, granted, the amounts of measles and mumps in the U.S. in terms of cases are not out of control. So something to consider. Now, when was the first vaccine created? Does anyone out there know? Little trivia here. In 1798, that was when the first vaccine was created against smallpox. And according to data through the CDC, we eradicated smallpox in 1979. So that's about 201 years it took to get rid of it. But hey, smallpox is a nasty, nasty illness. And I highly, you know, think that that was a good idea to have a vaccine against smallpox. So another biggie that I highly support is polio. I had the pleasure of knowing my father's best friend growing up, and this fellow had polio, and I watched him struggle, and he had great dreams. He wanted to be a race car driver like my dad, and he did get into the race cars, but he could never fully race to his full capacity because of having polio. And so while this fellow was not completely paralyzed, he did have braces on his legs. And as he got older and prior to his death, his lack of mobility and being able to move around really did, I think, shorten his life. And, you know, he was a happy-go-lucky guy, great character, very funny guy. But, you know, if you asked him if you could have gotten away with not getting polio, would you? And he was like, heck yeah, if there was a vaccine when I was a kid. And you got to remember that he was born in the late 1930s. And so, you know, in this case, there wasn't anything. But by the 50s, we actually had a vaccine for polio. And at this point in time, we really only have three countries, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Nigeria, that still have polio. And for all intents and purposes, I'm looking at data saying that by 2018, we might actually rule out having polio and have it being eradicated. And that's pretty cool. But for all intents and purposes, that's one that I definitely, you know, when I talk to people about vaccines, I'm always saying, you know, I think we have some really good advances with polio in particular, and with smallpox. Those are two examples of really great cases in which vaccines are really, really useful. Now, the rest of the ones that we have out there, I don't think we have enough data on them. The other big thing that worries me a little bit is that the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, notes that about 3 of every 100 people who get 2 doses of measles, mumps, and rubella, it's known as the MMR vaccine, will get measles if exposed to the virus. Now, they might have a milder illness, but they also could spread it. It's less likely. So I'm kind of like, is that worth it? Because the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine has something called thimerosal. It's a mercury preservative in it. And I don't know, does the benefit outweigh the risk in this case? Because if you were to come down with measles, mumps, or rubella, it's an inconvenience. And this is something that I tell parents, you know, it's an inconvenience. You might end up having to stay home for a week or so while your kiddo, or perhaps yourself, if you did not get this vaccination, while you're getting better. Now, that's an inconvenience for some, but some people can't take that time off work. So something to consider there. But for all intents and purposes, it looks like there's really an 88% efficacy rate in terms of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine actually preventing mumps. And so I'd like it to be 100%. So that's one of those vaccines that I often tell folks, well, you know, It's not 100% in terms of being a high quality vaccine. Let's put it that way in terms of the illness. And yeah, maybe you don't want to get measles, mumps, or rubella. And I think that's great. If you don't want to get it, by all means, get the vaccine. I think it's just important to be informed and have an idea of what's out there and what kind of cases we have with this. Now, one thing to keep in mind with measles as well. Out of all of the data that I was looking through on the measles, I found some really interesting components from a Dr. Donald Miller, who is a University of Washington doc here in the Seattle area. And what was noted in an article that he had written or put through Mercola.com is that he noted that for the first 60 years of having measles, the mortality rate was 133 deaths per million people in 1900. So 133 deaths per million people, and that combined to 3 people out of every 100 still getting measles with the vaccine, that's not great data. Now the other biggie is that the death rate from the measles dropped to 0.3 deaths per million by 1960. I would like to see 0.3 of a death. I guess that's like, what, 2 legs, 2 arms, 1 person? Kind of weird. But if it's dropped to 0.3 deaths per million by 1960, well, okay, that's not bad. But measles caused less than 100 deaths a year in the U.S. before there was a vaccine for this disease in 1963. So why do we have a vaccine for something that caused less than 100 deaths a year? It's kind of crazy. But for those 100 parents, I'm sure that they wish that there's a vaccine. So I guess what I'm saying with the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine is you really, really want to pay attention to if it's worth it for you or for your children or not. So something to think about. Now, as adults, if you've already been vaccinated, you don't have to worry about this anymore. You've already got the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. You have the mercury in your system. Hopefully you cleared it out. I'm going to talk a little bit about that later. But if you have kiddos, it's something to look into and something to just kind of weigh out. Does the benefit of that vaccine outweigh the risk? And when your kiddo gets that vaccine, that's more of the component that I really want to highlight to folks. I really think that vaccines, when we get them, the timing is critical. That is huge, huge, huge. Because if we're sitting around eating crappy food, crappy Franken food, we're sitting around with a whole bunch of environmental toxins in our immune systems, we're, you know, putting skincare products on with a bunch of hormone adjusters and things of that nature. I mean, this isn't good because we already are going to have an inflamed immune system. And then, like I said before, you put in this big hit vaccine that's going to boost our immune system. And what happens? Well, autoimmune stuff happens. Autoimmune conditions have been on the rise since vaccines have been mandated in the US. I can't help but think that there's a connection there. So something to think about for adults. Are you walking around daily with hives? Are you itching? Do you have rashes? Do you have gut issues? Are you taking over-the-counter allergy meds because your nose is always congested and you have post-nasal drip every single day? So you've got stuff in your throat. You're constantly going, clearing your throat or chronically coughing. Or do you feel like you're always coming down with something, like you always are getting sick? Well, these are the folks who you get a booster vaccine like your tetanus vaccine, or you get, let's say, your hepatitis B vaccine. Maybe you're in the healthcare field and you didn't get all of your shots for your hepatitis B. Well, this is a big deal. Maybe you're going overseas, you're going to go work in a hospital or on a mission, and you're going to get hepatitis A and B shots. You want to think about where your immune system is. Now, one of the other big things with some data that I kind of perused a little bit through, there's not a lot on it, but I do hear it from my military patients, is that a lot of folks seem to develop weird autoimmune types of conditions after deploying, after they get all of their vaccines for deploying, because they get them all at once. They just line up and boom, 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 there it goes. And all of that hit to the immune system, having to deal with all of those vaccines on top of a trash gut, Franken food, and other immune reactions just from the environment. I mean, this is a huge mess that, yeah, I think has a huge connection to autoimmune conditions. So now let's think about this in another aspect. So we have a shingles vaccine now, so you can prevent getting shingles, and it's effective most of the time. Some people still do get shingles. Shingles are a rash that comes out. It's by the varicella virus. It's the same virus that causes chickenpox. So if you had chickenpox as a kiddo, you have the shingles virus in your body, lives in your nervous system, just hanging out, waiting to rear its other ugly head when you get stressed. And it doesn't matter what age you are. I've noticed that folks even in their 30s, 20s, all the way up to their 70s, 80s can get shingles. And so I think the really big thing to consider here is, are you going to die from shingles? No. Is it a pain? Yes. It burns. It hurts. It's quite annoying. Sometimes the irritated nerve, kind of itchy burn symptoms can last for months, sometimes years. Some people never get rid of it fully. That's a pain. But do I think that we need to vaccinate against it? I don't know. Same thing along the lines of chickenpox. I mean, what about the kids of the 70s? If anyone's out there as a kid of the 70s, we had chickenpox parties. If someone in the neighborhood got chickenpox, moms would bring all their other kids over and you'd just get your chickenpox all out of the way at that time. Now, we have vaccines that are basically stating that, oh, well, you won't get the marks on your skin left over from scabs from the chickenpox. Oh my goodness, are we that vain? Really? I have a pock mark on the side of my head that my mom always was like, that was the only one that gave you a mark. And I think it's just part of you. And I think she's right. So something to think about. Are we becoming that vain where we can't deal with pain, so we don't want the shingles when we get older, and we don't want to deal with our kids maybe getting a pock mark in the middle of their forehead? I don't know. It's up to you. But something to put out there in terms of, they're out there. You can get these vaccines. Are they worth it? I don't know. It's up to you, like I said. So, going to the HPV, so human papilloma virus vaccinations. If you are young enough and not tainted enough, you can get that vaccine. I was too old when they came out with that vaccine, so I didn't get it. But like I said before, we've got a lot of preteens and teens who are riddled with acne, eating crappy food, drinking soda, staying up late, not taking care of themselves, and then they're getting these vaccines. So overinflamed equals autoimmune conditions. That's all I have to say. That's why I think we have these issues with infertility. I don't think it's the vaccine really that's causing the problem. I think it's our own immune systems are hyperactive. So another big thing to think about in terms of vaccines. And the reason I'm mentioning so much on kids is not because I want to be talking about pediatrics so much, but because I want adults who have had vaccines to go back and think about when their symptoms started. If you have autoimmune conditions, if you have eczema, if you have psoriasis, when did they start? How old were you? Because let's think of it this way. Babies don't even have their own developed immune system until they're getting past 6 months of age. And I mean, that's a basic stage because they're running off of mom's immune system till they're about 6 months of age. Now at 6 months of age, they're starting to develop their own. And 6 months of age, well, even 4 months at this point in the US, we're recommending kids to have food being introduced. So at the same time, they're going through these rigorous schedules of vaccinations. And by that, I mean, before a child reaches the age of 2, they will have received 32 vaccinations on the standard vaccination cycle. That's 32 hits to their already slowly developing immune system that's having to figure out how they feel about mangoes and pineapple and all these other foods that are being introduced to them, such as all the preservatives and artificial dyes and colorings and all of those things. So any of us who have pretty much grown up in the environment, any of us who are in our 40s, 30s, 40s, we grew up in the height of the Frankenfood environment. And so think about when you were 6 months of age, your first food, or maybe it was 4 months of age, or if your mom couldn't breastfeed, you were getting soy milk, you were getting formula with corn and soy in it, you're already getting these highly inflammatory items into your system. Your immune system's trying to figure out what to do with them, and then you're getting all these vaccinations on top of it. What are our immune systems supposed to do? It's almost like we go back to the thought of survival of the fittest. Those who are able to adapt can and do well, and those who can't get autoimmune conditions, get skin conditions, get gut conditions, like IBS. really, what is IBS, irritable bowel syndrome? Is it an autoimmune type of condition? What about celiacs? Why do we have so many people with celiac? Why do we have so many people with Crohn's, colitis, all these different things? There's something to it. So just wanted to put that out there because I am by no means a pediatric specialist. I don't know necessarily enough, I feel, in order to recommend a full schedule of vaccinations. I will give you some resources at the end of this for those of you who have children. But those of you who don't, or those of you who are struggling with autoimmune conditions, like Hashimoto's thyroiditis, where did that come from? What is going on? Why are thyroids starting to fail? Why are adrenal glands failing so fast? What the heck happened here? So I can't help but think that we got to go back to the food system compared to the vaccines. Are we overinflamed even at 6 months of age when we're just starting to develop our immune system? We're coming off of mom's immunity and we're introducing foods at the same time. Who knows? A lot of people are giving their kids cream of rice. Rice has arsenic in it. Cream of wheat at that time. I mean, these are types of foods that are irritants. So something to think about. And if you didn't have the money or resources to give kids not pesticide-free, so organic foods, now you've got all the pesticides, things of that nature. In my age, we didn't necessarily think even about the hormones in meat. And so at, a year of age, when kids are still getting their vaccines, they're also loaded with all of these hormones from dairy, hormones from cows and pork products and all these different chicken products. My goodness. So something to think about. I don't want to be doom and gloom this whole podcast, but I'm just wanting to really put it into your head that there is a connection that I am pretty sure has to do with when we have our vaccines, our vaccine schedules, and our inflammation in our body overall. So something to think about there. It's a tough gig. Now, I sound very, very anti-vaccine at this moment, don't I? Well, I'm not, because if you remember before, I actually really do recommend a few of them. And so this is what I tell patients. I recommend the polio vaccination. I really highly do. If you're an adult and you haven't had a polio vaccination and you might be going to Nigeria, Afghanistan, or Pakistan, if you're in the military, by all means, you better get it. If you're going to do any medical missions, do it. You do not want to be messing around with this, especially if you have children and your children might go with you on medical missions. Make sure you get this covered. Now, I'm a little bit different in terms of the other folks out there in my world of natural medicine and vaccine opinions. I really do think that hepatitis B vaccine is an important vaccine to have, hands down. It's given usually at birth. I don't think that's necessarily a problem. Now, Dr. Miller, who is the UW doc from Seattle here, he doesn't recommend any vaccinations till after the age of 2. Well, the way I see it with a newborn, the newborn really is working off of mom's immunity, developing, slightly going to develop their own starting at 6 months of age. But at birth, they're not as tainted as they're going to be by 6 months of age. And so my thought is that, heck, give them the hepatitis B virus, because hepatitis B can live in dry blood for up to 7 days. You do not know if you are going to be exposed to dry blood. You might have cuts, you might have scrapes, you have no idea. I feel like you don't even have to be in the healthcare industry to be exposed to blood. And so my biggest thought is I think hepatitis B vaccination is important. And I think my opinion comes because of seeing a lot of folks that have hepatitis B and how hard it is on their liver and long-term life. It's costly and it shortens their lifespan. You need your liver to detoxify. It's a huge thing. And I really do think that hepatitis B vaccinations are important, and that's why. So, tetanus and diphtheria, they are typically paired together in something called a TD type of vaccination. In a perfect world, I would love people to get vaccines separate. So tetanus and then wait 6 months and get diphtheria. But unfortunately, it's just not as common and harder to get those single dose vials. And a lot of vaccination centers just give you a lot of fuss to get those. So it's sometimes better to go with the flow. Now, if you can't get the tetanus and diphtheria together, you will get something called a Tdap, which is tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. Pertussis is the cough, the big respiratory illness. And hey, you know, you can protect your grandkids or kiddos out there, since, you know, we've been mass marketed that this is a big problem out there. But I do think that tetanus and diphtheria are important vaccinations to have. And the reason being is diphtheria is a bacteria. It is pretty virulent. And by that, I mean, it is a nasty bug. It's way nastier, I think, and can cause huge issues faster than measles, mumps, or rubella. The bacteria can literally close off the airway and kill you. It's nasty. So I think it's worth it to get this. Now, tetanus, this is a biggie, especially if you're a gardener or an outdoor enthusiast. Think rusty nails, rusty auto parts, things in the ground, tin cans, aluminum peel lids, things that might be discarded and rusting, maybe while you're camping and you almost step on it while you're wearing your flip-flops. This just happened to me literally last week when we went camping, and I almost literally cut my toe open with this lid that was discarded and rusting. And that's a big deal. Tetanus will kill you fast. It's got nasty side effects for the neurological system. It's just not good to have. And so I really do think that if you are someone who likes to swim in rivers or kayaks, paddle boards, all those kind of things, think about lakes as well. You don't know what's under that water. You don't know what's in that sand. You don't know what's in the riverbed. And if you cut yourself and there's something that can get you infected, there you go. Problems. So I really think it's important to get your tetanus booster as you are older, and do this every 10 years. That's really important. I've done it. And the big thing is, if you're going to get the vaccine, just make sure that you're body's healthy. You're not having a bunch of skin reactions. You're not having acne. You're not inflamed. Basically, one of the best ways that I tell folks to go about this is do a detox of your liver, your lymphatic system, and do the whole 30 diet. Basically, clean eating. No toxins, no alcohol, no processed foods, no additives. Do it for like a month before you get a vaccine, and your body's going to be a lot better when you get that vaccine. If you can't do a month, at least 2 weeks. Just calm the system down so that your immune system is not on hyper alert. It's just a great way to think about approaching vaccines. Now, another biggie that I do recommend is a hepatitis A vaccine if you are going to go to areas where hepatitis A is really, really popular. So I have seen a couple folks that have had hepatitis A, and it is not pretty. It's definitely going to wreck a vacation for sure. And if you're backpacking and traveling through some certain third world countries where hepatitis A is very prevalent, I think it's worth it. Like I said before, calm your body down, detoxify, get the vaccine, you should be all good. That's my theory. Now, going to the measles, mumps, rubella thing, I really am not a huge proponent of it for two reasons. One, because the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine has thimerosal as a mercury preservative in it, and I don't like it. I personally think that the benefits outweigh the risk. The risk of not getting the vaccine outweighs the benefit of having the vaccine, since you can stay home, deal with it. You just have to be prepared that if you get the measles, the mumps, or rubella, you need to be able to treat it and stay home and not infect anybody else. That is, you know, for some people not a possibility, but something to consider. I think it's just not a huge necessary vaccine. Flu shot. Oh boy. Oh, where do I start with this one? It's not 100% foolproof, because you're using a virus from the year before, or what is like thought of in terms of being the shot du jour. And in this case, it's not always effective. And so oftentimes I recommend this for folks who are elderly, immune compromised, young folks who are immune compromised, sure. And by that, I mean going through cancer HSPs, you know, elderly, just, you know, someone who's got COPD, just not doing well in terms of their health. And that might sound strange. Why would I want to give something to someone to ramp up their immune system? Well, the idea here is to ramp it up enough to protect them. If they have an overactive immune system, I'm not going to recommend the flu shot. Same thing goes with pneumonia, but I do recommend the pneumonia for my elderly patients for sure, because it could kill them quick, and that's a big deal. The shingles and chicken pox, like I said before, you're not going to die from shingles or chicken pox. You might suffer with some pain, some scarring. It breaks down to how vain are you, you know? And can you deal with neuro effects if they do happen? Now, here's the thing. If you get shingles, come to a naturopath or an acupuncturist. We can knock that stuff out fast and help you to have a lot less symptoms. Same thing with getting some B12 in your system. Vitamin B12 is excellent for helping with the itching and the pain with shingles. And so there's a lot of things you can do naturally to calm down shingles. Same thing with chicken pox. There are a lot of things you can do to protect the skin. So something to keep in mind there. You're not, you know, screwed in terms of if you get chicken pox, you're going to have this terrible scarring. There's lots of things you can do to help the skin maintain its integrity. All right. The HPV, the human papillomavirus, Gardasil vaccines and things of that nature. I need some more data on this. I think we don't have enough time to really know if this is a good vaccine for us or not. Now, I know that you can't ensure, if you have children, you're not going to ensure that your kid's going to stay celibate. And if you're older and have not had sex yet, you're not going to have any exposure to the human papillomavirus in terms of the ones that cause cervical cancer. However, or throat cancer for that matter, and penile cancer and things of that nature. But if you are someone who is going to not engage in sex prior to getting married, now you have to also guarantee that your partner was also not messing around either. So, you know, it's a crapshoot. I say get your gut right, get your skin right prior to these, and de-inflame the body and go for the vaccination in some cases. Now, another thing is you have to think about the possibility for infertility and issues with the periods. And ladies, I mean, the infertility is on the rise, and that's a big thing to think about here. So going back to it is, I really think I need more data before I have a fully educated answer on the human papillomavirus vaccine. But I think that there's pros and cons to it, and it's something to really assess before you do it and look at how your health is before you go ahead and do it. Now, above all of this is really to separate out the vaccines. So if you are an adult and you want to get your tetanus booster, you're probably going to get tetanus and diphtheria together unless you can get a hold of a single dose tetanus. If you can do single dose tetanus and you can avoid the diphtheria, because if you get a tetanus and a diphtheria vaccine on the same day, your immune system has to deal with both of those things. Just more for it to deal with. Just something to keep in mind. Now, if you have kiddos and you're trying to figure out what the heck to do about these schedules, well, there's a lot of different folks out there that have suggestions on schedules. Even Paleo Mama and folks out there have their opinions on schedules. I recommend finding a naturopathic doctor or an integrative physician, such as Dr. Paul Thomas. I put his schedule as a recommendation here in the resources. I also put the Paleo Mama's version in there because it's not far from what I would recommend to patients if I was seeing kiddos, and it's not far from what I do recommend to the adults that have kiddos that ask me about it. But for all intents and purposes, I do recommend separating the vaccinations out by about 6 months apart at the very least, just so the body can react and deal with these vaccines. Now, before you get a vaccine, I've mentioned already before, clean up your immune system. Really avoid all the inflammatory foods. So the nightshades, the tomato, the potato, the peppers, the eggplant, goji berries even. Wheat, dairy, soy, corn, junk food, alcohol. Don't do your superfoods in excess when you're going to get your immune system boosted with the vaccine. A lot of us take mushroom extracts such as reishi mushroom or lion's mane, things of that nature. Don't do that around the same time you're going to take a vaccine. You don't want your immune system on hyper alert. Same thing with astragalus, same thing with echinacea. And green tea, of all things, actually has immune system function too. You just really want to keep your superfoods in check at that point. Don't overdo it. Just keep it out of the way. I usually keep them out of the system for at least 2 weeks. The other big thing, drink lots of water. Take milk thistle prior to clean up your liver. And I usually have people do that about a month ahead. Clean up your lymphatic system, get some cilantro, get some celery, get some parsley, cucumbers, and you could also get some celery and some cranberries in, and just clean out the lymphatic system. Stop the processed foods and GMO foods at least a month prior. If allergies, you know, if you've got allergies to animals and trees and grass, you know, just don't get your vaccine at the height of allergy season. Wait. If you're taking anti-allergy meds on a daily basis, try to calm your system down. Do a Whole30 challenge. See if you don't need to take your allergy meds. If you have an animal allergy, get a HEPA filter. Clean your house more regularly. Have someone clean it for you if that bothers you. And just really try to lower all allergen possibilities, anything that could inflame your immune system. Now, if you are going to get a vaccine that has some mercury, thimerosal is the name of the preservative in it, take milk thistle, take chlorella, take some probiotics and vitamin C. Eat a quarter cup of cilantro a day to help clear that stuff out. You can give that to your kids, and I'll put this in my resources as the list there since I just rattled those off really fast. Keep in mind that the MMR, so measles, mumps, rubella, and the IPV, that's the polio vaccine, they both have thimerosal as a preservative. I still recommend the polio vaccine because, even though it has thimerosal in it, because the benefit outweighs the risk of the mercury. A lot of us are walking around with mercury amalgams, so these are our fillings, our dental fillings for cavities. So we're getting exposed to mercury anyway, so it's a good idea to consider taking some milk thistle on a daily basis anyway to clear out your liver. Chlorella is awesome too, just to help to clear out the liver. And hey, if you like cilantro, if you're one of those folks, throw that on everything, just like you throw your hot sauce on stuff. Put that stuff on everything. Quarter cup a day keeps the mercury away. All right, so I've got some great resources on my website at drjkrausnd.com. If you click on my podcast, you can scroll down to the bottom. I've got the CDC recommended routine vaccines, the preservatives in vaccines. I've got travel vaccines noted here. And then I've got Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. She is an anti-vaccine advocate. I want you to get the idea of what some of these folks are out there and what they're talking about. Dr. Donald Miller, that is the guy from University of Washington in Seattle. Also, Dr. Paul Thomas. I have his alternative vaccine schedule for babies. And I also have the Paleo Mama's alternative vaccine schedule, because I think it's important to just see what's out there and know the two sides of the vaccine discussion. Why we need them, what they can be beneficial for, and know the risks if you're gonna vaccinate, and know what you gotta do if you're going to vaccinate. And so this whole podcast was somewhat of a public service announcement, and I know it was a little long-winded, so I apologize for that and applaud you for staying with me on this one. So if you're still thinking about getting some vaccinations before you head out on a vacation, or you're wondering if you want to get your booster for tetanus, things of that nature, because you're an outdoor enthusiast, keep in mind where your health's at when you're going to get that vaccine. Plan ahead. If you have allergies, plan ahead to not do it during allergy season. Consider the middle of the winter as a good time for it, since that's the least of the allergies in that case. And definitely, if you're sick at all going into getting a vaccine, do not do it, because your immune system's already active. And make sure you check your superfoods, because some of us who are extremely interested in staying healthy overdo it on the superfoods, and we don't want to be taking those around the time when we get our vaccines, because you don't want to have your immune system boosted. You want the vaccine to boost it, let it do its gig, and don't give it that chance for an autoimmune type of reaction where your immune system overdoes it. All right, you've survived another podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Kraus. I really appreciate you listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast and you want to pass this information on to other friends, I highly recommend it. Share it with everyone. I'd really like folks to get the word out about vaccines and the connection with autoimmune conditions, since we have so many folks that have autoimmune conditions. It's super on the rise, and infertility is as well. So pass the word on. I really appreciate it. And give me some feedback. I'd love to hear what you think of the podcast. Alrighty. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy your day. Thanks for tuning in to The Health Fix, the podcast all about taking control of your health, rebelling against aging, and having fun every day. A lot of patients ask me, do you think I'm aging too fast? So I created an evaluation checklist for you to see for yourself. Plus, I created a resource guide to help you slow down the aging process right now. You can find it for free on my website, drjkrausnd.com. If you like this podcast, help get the word out to others by liking it and rating it. If you'd like more natural health tips and want to join our Facebook community where I interact daily, click on the join group button on our website at drjkrausnd.com.